Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are looking at the recent budget speech by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni earlier this week. You know, we had that pre-budget show. We're talking to Momentum Securities just around, you know, what that some of the expectations were. And, you know, quite a few of them actually, you know, came out the way that we spoke about on Monday. But now we're doing the post-mortem, looking at, you know, what actually happened in the speech, the balancing act that the finance minister had to do. All of this on the back of the State of the Nation address that President Cyril Ramaphosa gave a few weeks ago, and actually going into the specifics of how the government is going to be funding its activities in 2021. So for today, we are happy and privileged to be joined by the team from PwC. That is one of the biggest auditing firms in the world and in South Africa. So we're joined by Kyle Mandy, who is a tax technical leader at PwC, together with Lulu Krugel, who is the chief economist at PwC. I'll start with Lulu. Greetings to you. Your general impressions about what happened in that speech, you know, what was said, what was perhaps not said?
Thank you very much, Mudiwa. Yes, it, I think as you said, when we look back to what we said beforehand, the Minister of Finance actually ticked a lot of the boxes. A lot of the things that we expected he would touch on were part of his was part of his speech, actually, and were some of the areas that he focused on when he delivered his speech. If I have to think about the movements that was announced around taxes, and Kyle will go into that in quite a bit more detail, that was more or less what we expected. If we look at the budget deficit, that was in line with what we expected. We expected National Treasury to collect a bit more money than what they anticipated in October. We were hoping that he would really look at the expenditure side of the budget, in particular certain areas that we've been highlighting over the last couple of years, I have to say. And that was also part of what the IMF has asked South Africa to look at, and what the rating agencies have asked South Africa to look at. So, and those were to look at what we spend on public sector salaries. And we know that that is all but being frozen for the next three or odd years. We wanted to look at general expenditure that wasn't necessarily delivering what we wanted to. Again, you know, if you look at the expenditure trends, quite a conservative budget from that side. And we also heard that quite a few government departments, including National Treasury, is looking at zero-based budgeting. So really going back to the drawing board and rethinking what we're spending money on. One area where we have not heard a lot was on SOEs. There was a focus on Eskom. For me, I think we should stop focusing on Eskom and start focusing on electricity supply in the country. And yeah, of course, the money that's going towards the SOEs is quite important. That is part of the broader budget documentation, and it's there if you want to have a look at it. What is also there is the fact that National Treasury says that it would take us 2 to 3 years to get back to where we were in 2019. Again, not something that the minister necessarily focused on in his speech, because we're climbing this hill, and I think it was time for some good news as well. But if you read the budget documentation, you realize that National Treasury and the minister is quite aware of where we are as a nation.
I'm certainly going to come back to that point of, you know, the SOEs just now. But before that, Kyle, your take, especially as a tax professional, that was definitely a big, you know, focus when just looking at how the speech was structured.
Yes, thanks, Mudiwa. Certainly, as Lulu indicated, it was broadly in line with what our expectations were. There certainly has been a trend over the last couple of years at least towards making the tax system more market and growth friendly. And we've seen that that trend continue as a theme into this year's budget. Obviously, from a tax collection performance perspective, that is positive news in line with our expectations. And in fact, the 100 billion rand better than expected performance, insofar as that's concerned, is probably towards the low end of the expectations. It might actually end up being a little better than that. But overall, that's positive news. The fact that the tax increases that were announced in the NTBPS last year of 40 billion rand over the next 4 years has been withdrawn is extremely positive. And I think that was only made possible by the better than expected performance in terms of revenue collections. We've also seen the continued trend towards reducing the corporate tax rate over the medium term as part of a base broadening exercise, and we certainly welcome that. What was positive is now we've seen Treasury pin their colours to the mast, so to speak, by giving at least a timeline for the first rate reduction, which will take place in 2022, with the rate going down to 27%. So that's a very positive move, which is definitely growth-friendly and investment-friendly, and something that we welcome with open arms. Another positive was the announcement that 3 billion rand will be given to SARS over the next 3 years for investment in technology. I think that's a crucial aspect. And the funds, and those funds are needed by SARS to really actually not only invest in technology, but also invest in skills that are required to close the tax gap, which we expect is extremely significant. Our expectations are that could be as high as 200 billion rand per year. So that's really where the focus needs to be in terms of improving revenue collection performance as opposed to increasing tax rates, which again is a growth-friendly strategy, if you like, and is to be welcomed. Perhaps the only low light from a tax point of view in the budget, certainly from certain quarters, would be the 8% increase in the specific excise duties on alcohol and tobacco. I think that certainly caught us a little bit by surprise, and I'm sure it's caught those industries by surprise. And I think there's going to be a lot of debate in relation to that over the coming weeks.
Actually, you know, as you're talking, I'd like to follow up, you know, because taxes were such a big thing, and maybe get your sense, Kyle, to understand, you know, on balance, you know, everything that that the minister is saying yesterday, because once again, it's a balance. You're sort of giving on in one hand and you're taking away in the other, because as much as there was some tax relief, we did see there was some tax relief. We saw the corporate tax rate coming down. There was an expansion of you know, tax brackets, but at the same time, we're seeing, you know, increases in fuel levies that are likely to have, you know, some effect, you know, down the line on, you know, other consumer prices, etc. So on balance, you know, when it comes to the way that taxes were done yesterday, how is the consumer looking?
Well, on balance, if you look at it from a point of view of the economy rather than looking at it purely through the lens of the consumer, it is positive. And the reason why I say that is, to the extent that we've had tax increases, whether you're talking about the various levies on fuel or if you're talking about the excise duties on alcohol and tobacco, those are the least damaging and the taxes, a way to raise taxes, as compared to raising those taxes through direct taxes, i.e. taxes on companies and personal income taxes on individuals. So that's a positive. And over the last few years, we've seen Treasury making those noises, if you like, around the tax reform. Unfortunately, our tax system over the last 10 to 15 years has drifted quite significantly away from a burden on indirect taxes to more of a burden on direct taxes. So we've got out of sync insofar as that's concerned. And Treasury is slowly, you can see, trying to pull that back to make our overall tax framework, if you like, a little bit more growth friendly. And ultimately, that boils down to being more consumer friendly at the end of the day.
Okay. Lulu, I think now we can really get in on these SOEs. You said something, I think that's, you know, very pertinent, where you said we shouldn't be focusing on Eskom, but rather we should be focusing on, electricity generation. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and perhaps, you know, maybe your thoughts on why the finance minister thought to make this glaring omission from his speech? I mean, everyone was going to catch on to it and everyone was sort of expecting him to say something about it, but he didn't. And there is so much money going to some of these state-owned enterprises, especially Eskom.
Absolutely. I think if we were looking and everybody was looking at what we were going to spend on SOEs this year. You know, it's been something that's been part of the budget speech. And as I alluded earlier, the IMF also, when they gave us the 70 billion last year, said, you better look at what is going towards SOEs. But maybe just starting with your first question around why I said electricity supply and stop focusing so much on Eskom. It feels to me like there's been an absolute focus on trying to fix Eskom. And there's certain parts of Eskom which I don't think is fixable. And we have more than 200 SOEs in South Africa, and I don't think we need all of them. Obviously, there's a space for SOEs. I'm one of those economists that believe that the market won't solve everything. And we should focus on actually providing, you know, and government should focus on providing services where the market fails. But there are a lot of areas where the markets can now successfully provide products, where how the way in which we do things have changed dramatically over the last couple of years. And electricity provision is one of them. And there's some lessons that we can take. And obviously, we are not Germany. We are not Australia, we are not any other country out there. We have our own challenges and problems that we need to look at. But of course, there are lessons that we can take from other countries and things that they've done, and we can explore whether or not those are in fact things that we should be focusing on as South Africa. So electricity supply, according to our calculations, is the most important in terms of quantum. I'm not talking necessarily in terms of, the impact that it might have on people's lives if I talk about something like healthcare, et cetera. But if you look at the quantum and the impact that it could have on the economy, electricity is the most important thing for us to fix. It was a challenge before COVID for quite a number of years. It's still a challenge. And in fact, if you look again at the documentation that's been put out by a national treasury, they're very open to say that last year was actually, in terms of electricity availability, the worst year that we've had since load shedding started. I think they said something like 52 days of load shedding in the economy. And that in a year where large parts of the economy weren't actually fully functioning and operating at its full capacity. So that's not great news. The minister touched on it very briefly yesterday when he said that, you know, there's been changes to the way in which the legislation is approached. There's been changes in the way in which municipalities can provide electricity, in which private sector companies can actually create and generate their own electricity. But we are still waiting for certain parts of that regulation to be implemented. And I honestly think in terms of the solution, government should step away in terms of thinking about Eskom alone and how do we fix Eskom. We should really think about how do we fix electricity supply. There's certain parts of Eskom that we're not going to fix. I'm not an expert on that. I'm not going to say for 1 second that I'm an expert, but there are certain parts that I think that we should perhaps really rethink instead of trying to leave the solution with Eskom. How do we open up the market? How do we make it easier for companies to generate their own electricity, etc.? In terms of the rest of the SOEs, Eskom by far gets the bulk of the money, and second in line, other SOEs like SAA and Denel, etc. And again, I think it's really necessary for us as a country to look at all the SOEs that we have. Having said that, I've spoken to somebody that works for a state institution yesterday, and they also said, it's difficult for us that are the employees because we didn't make the bad decisions. The bad decisions were made by management, etc. So I understand, and I can only think how difficult it must be if it's you or your brother or your father or a partner or somebody that is employed at one of these institutions. But I really do think it's necessary that we think differently. About SAA, that one remains a question for me at the moment. It was already a business that wasn't succeeding before COVID, and we are now in probably a situation where it's the worst time to actually invest additional money in airlines. Yes, I think the situation has changed, and we've actually seen a new low-cost airline coming into South Africa. But I really do think that we should think very carefully about where our money is going. It would have been enough to pay for the vaccines 2 or 3 times over, if we think about it, and the impact that would have on the economy is quite significant. So every cent that is going towards SOEs at the moment, it should have been like that for some time. But every cent that is going there, we should have some kind of reckoning or process of saying, what is it supposed to achieve, and has it achieved that? And at a certain point of time, you have to pull the plug on the likes of an SAA or somewhere else.
No, I certainly agree that there needs to be some type of an interrogation, especially when you consider, in the case of SAA, for example. I think when you look at the numbers or think of the numbers in relation to our most pressing, issue in South Africa right now and around the world, which is COVID-19, and the fact that, 10 billion, if I remember correctly, was what has been allocated towards just funds set aside to buy, vaccines for the country, whereas, Eskom receives 3 times that amount and SAA receives about half that amount. It sort of throws, obviously, these issues aren't cut and dry or simple, to that extent, very complex issues, but it does sort of throw what the country's, apparent priorities seem to be when you look at the numbers, from that point of view. Kyle, your take on where, all our tax funds are actually being directed to, whether it's SOEs or some of the other expenditure that you noticed?
Yes. I think at the end of the day, there are political decisions that are involved in terms of how revenues are spent. But when you've got scarce resources, there are trade-offs that need to be made insofar as that's concerned. And we need to prioritize where our funds are expended, where we get the most return for those scarce resources. And I think to some extent, over the last 10 to 20 years, we've not been particularly good at directing those scarce resources to the areas where they can make the most impact, if you like. But they're always going to be trade-offs, unfortunately, because there are limited resources with more demand for those resources than there are resources available. So as an example, we have to make decisions in terms of whether we're going to spend on social services, as an example, or are we going to spend in terms of investing in infrastructure for future growth. A part of that, of course, is if you're dealing with education, well, that is essentially is an investment as well into for future growth. But if you're talking about spending on, just as an example, social grants, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be spending on social grants, but the trade-offs insofar as that's concerned, it's consumption expenditure that is taking place there, and it's not expenditure that pays future dividends, if you like, in the form of increased economic growth down the line. So I think that those are some of the difficult trade-offs that need to be made when it comes to the expenditure side of things. And ultimately, it boils down to a balancing act between those different demands.
I'd like to just maybe take a step out, very quickly before we come to the end of the conversation. Lulu, apart from the fact that we got into the budget this week, there were some numbers around unemployment and how things are looking on that front. Your thoughts, had you had an opportunity to interrogate what's going on the employment front?
Yeah, unfortunately, probably one of our biggest concerns as South Africans is the rate of unemployment that we are sitting with as a country. Before COVID, I don't know where we are at the moment. There's so many things that have changed, but I suspect we are probably, unfortunately, still in that top three or four countries that have the highest unemployment rate. We were there before COVID. We were talking about an unemployment rate going to 30%. It's above 32% at the moment, unfortunately, spot on in line with what we were expecting. If you look at the number of jobs that we have lost last year, we were expecting between 1.3 and 1.4 million jobs or positions being lost. And I'm not talking here about new people moving into the labor market, etc. Strangely enough, we saw a drop in that number last year. I'll get back to that now. But yeah, we lost around 1.4 million positions last year. It came out, the numbers came out just below that. And that is what Stats SA has told us. So it's an improvement from where we were, obviously, in quarter two. I think we were at around 2.2 or just over 2 million jobs being lost at that point in time. So we've gotten some of that back as the economy opened up and we started operating again. Some of it in the informal sector, some of it in the formal sector. An unemployment rate of 32-odd% is not sustainable, specifically if you look at the fact that it is, if you look at subgroupings there, if you look at the youth, they are, for them, the unemployment rate is probably over that. So, yeah. It is something that government yesterday specifically touched on in the budget speech. I would have just liked to see a bit more about how do they plan to involve private sector in that. So government's role, that was clearly set out. I would have just wanted to hear a little bit more. The reduction in company taxes that we're looking at for next year is something that could help. But I do think that it's really important that we also rely on private sector to create jobs.
And then, as an end of for you, Lulu, your final thoughts and also outlook. One of the things we heard from the finance minister is a projection, I think, of around 5.5% growth in 2021, and then stabilize into about 4% in the next year. Is this in line with your models, your projections?
So the range that we are talking about at the moment is anywhere from about a 1% growth to around a 6%. It really depends on how quickly we are able to roll out the vaccines. The bottom line is that we must realize that even with strong growth this year, that You know, a lot of economists are expecting, we are expecting around 3.5%. It will still take us 2, 3, maybe 4 years to get back to where we were in 2019 in terms of real output. So I think the good news is we probably over the worst, we're climbing this hill, but we must realize that everything's not going to return to normal within the next couple of months.
All right. And then, Kyle, your take on the outlook for this year. And also, as you're answering, this is just a curiosity on my end. If we reduce a corporate tax rate from, let's say, 28 to 27%, what does that actually mean? Is there a way to like quantify how big of a move that would be in terms of either revenue collection or savings on the side of corporates?
Yeah, so to answer that question, it's actually difficult to quantify that. For a start, Treasury's intention is that it's not just a straight reduction in the corporate tax rate. It's part of a base broadening exercise, and it's intended to be revenue neutral. Of course, in theory, what will happen is if you reduce that corporate tax rate and you levy the tax across a broader base, it should be positive for economic growth. But the question is, what is that multiplier effect that comes with it? And that's where there's a little bit of uncertainty. And there are other factors, of course, that come into play insofar as that's concerned, not least of which is looking at the general business environment and business confidence in terms of making investment. So it's not an easy question to answer, and there are uncertainties. But certainly over the medium to long term, the international research suggests that that is the way to go, and that is what's positive for economic growth. In terms of the outlook, I think the budget was as positive as we could have expected it to be in the current environment. So there are those green shoots that are there, but we also need to be realistic and recognize that there are some risks. Some of which Lulu touched on, the pandemic being one of them. You know, if we don't roll out the vaccine quick enough, we could see third or fourth waves with the knock-on effect for the economy. There are questions over how quickly the economy will recover. And I think to a large extent, that depends on how much damage has actually been done, ultimately, particularly in the tourism and hospitality sectors. The jury's out on how quickly those sectors can recover. And then, of course, the big elephant in the room, and the biggest risk of them all probably, is the public sector wage bill. If we can't get those negotiations right and we end up with significant increases in public sector wages, that will completely destroy the expected outcomes insofar as fiscal consolidation are concerned. So, yeah, it's positive, but there are significant risks that need to be addressed over the coming year as well.
Positive, but with significant risks that need to be addressed over time. That's been us with Kyle Mandy, who is a tax technical leader at auditing firm PwC, together with Lulu Krugo, chief economist at PwC, giving us their insights into what's happened, this week in terms of the budget speech that the finance minister came out with. We were focusing primarily on what actually, came out, or what he spoke about and didn't speak about, and then talking quite a bit about the SOEs, particularly Eskom. Lulu talking about the fact that perhaps there should be a focus rather than the old debate around Eskom, rather enable or empower people to get in on the power generation game, more players from the private sector, more private individuals, doing their own power generation, anything that can help us to, push the country forward when it comes to just making sure that the lights are kept on. And then just ending off with Kyle giving us some insight into what some of these taxes mean, because, some concessions were given on one hand, but at the same time, things were being, taken up, such as sin taxes. And he says those are usually some of the easiest ones, or the ones that have the least impact on consumers as a whole.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Once again, another tough balancing act that has been performed by the Finance Minister Tito Mboweni with his budget speech this week. As you were hearing during the conversation, one of the things that I'm particularly curious about is how much of an impact does a 1 percentage point change or decrease in the corporate tax rate actually mean? You know, what does that actually account to? I like the fact that Kyle does say that it's hard to quantify because, you know, it's in conjunction, you know, with the, you know, with this broader approach that the government has. But at the same time, you know, we saw, you know, certain cuts happening, you know, whether it comes to, you know, things like social spending. It was quite conspicuous that the finance minister did not, you know, make it a point to speak about state-owned enterprises, which is a big draw on state funds. I guess from a messaging point of view, like what Lulu was saying, there needs to be some sort of good news in the economy, and they did get into a lot of detail in their supplementary documents, which means they are well aware of what's actually going on, not to say that they are ignoring the issues or rather just decided to leave it out of the speech. Going forward, it will be most interesting to see what actually happens, because if the last year has taught us anything, is that we can have a lot of good plans at the start of the year, but, you know, an unexpected event. We don't expect things like COVID-19 to happen every year, but it is a reality at the moment. And one of the things that, you know, will be crucial is this vaccine rollout, because if there is a third and a fourth wave, for example, that has a bearing on the state's resources and has a knock-on effect on the broader economy and its ability to reach the 5.5% growth that the finance minister alluded to. So that's going to be, you know, key and very crucial, you know, going forward. And also just seeing where, you know, some of those projections actually, you know, end up when we get to the midterm budget, you know, what's actually going to be happening, especially when it comes to things like the amount that's been set out for the vaccination campaign, that 10 billion rand. Is it still going to be 10 billion rand, or are we going to come in under budget, or are we going to find ourselves in a situation where the country spends actually more than it, you know, initially anticipated on rolling out the vaccine? Vaccines. But the vaccine, that's going to be the key news of the year and a big factor in determining, you know, South Africa's path back to those pre-COVID levels that the minister does say are going to take us a few years. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Thank you so much to the team for PwC for sharing their insights with us. So with that, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much. You remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter or hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.